Track 7. London Landmarks. This month's London landmark is the Elizabeth Tower. Many of you may wonder where this is, but you will discover you know it by another name. The reader is Gary O'Donoghue. Gary is a BBC reporter, and he's now the BBC's chief political correspondent in Washington, D.C. No doubt a very challenging assignment. When Gary recorded this a few years ago, he was working in the BBC's London office, and he passed the Elizabeth Tower every day, although he could not see it.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I love London so.
My name is Gary O'Donoghue, and I work in London as a political correspondent for the BBC. The London landmark I've chosen is the Clock Tower, which houses Big Ben and stands close to Westminster Bridge. As I'm blind, my relationship with this tower is an unusual one, because I have no idea what it looks like. This was an excellent opportunity for me to find out more about it. Many people refer to the tower as Big Ben, but this is actually the nickname of the massive 13-ton bell which hangs inside the tower above the clock mechanism and chimes the hour. Until recently, the official name was just the Clock Tower. However, this year it was formally renamed the Elizabeth Tower in honour of the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, which celebrated her 60th year on the throne. My guess is that despite the renaming, residents and visitors to the UK will carry on referring to the tower colloquially as Big Ben, as they have done for years. The clock tower stands at the northern end of the Houses of Parliament, right next to Westminster Bridge. I pass it every day on my way to work at the BBC studios on Millbank. The clock is renowned for its accuracy, and the BBC transmits the sound live every day at 6 p.m. and midnight. I've stood many times on College Green, a small grassy area opposite Parliament, waiting to deliver a report or interview an MP. As the hour strikes, listeners to the radio will hear the newsreader neatly fitting in a headline, punctuated by the notes of the gigantic bell. But when you're actually there, the sound reverberates, bouncing off the ancient buildings surrounding the green, so that for every dong, you get a second one. It's so deliberate, you know what it is going to sound like and does exactly what you expect, and in that sense, it's quite reassuring. The bell's sonorous tones are familiar to millions of people around the world. As it finished chiming on midnight, May the 7th, 1945, the tower was floodlit to herald the beginning of VE Day, victory in Europe, and the end of the Second World War. More recently, I was in Westminster when it became part of an artwork by an artist called Martin Creed. It chimed 40 times at 12 minutes past 8 one July morning, accompanied by the merry sounds of church bells, saucepans, musical instruments and bicycle bells around the UK to herald the start of the 2012 Olympic Games in London. The present Houses of Parliament were designed by Sir Charles Barry to replace the previous building, which was almost completely destroyed by fire in 1834. The magnificent clock tower was not included in the original plans, but was added later. Work began on it in 1843, yet it took almost 16 years before it was completed, and Big Ben was heard for the first time in 1859. If you leave Westminster Underground Station by exit number 3, a flight of stone steps takes you to the very foot of the tower. Well, as close as you can get anyway, as there are two metal security fences between you and the square stone base. Another set of steps on the left leads up onto the bridge itself, where the tower rises up and you can get a good view of it. Never having seen it myself, I'd always imagined the tower to be like a child's drawing of a house, only a very tall, narrow house with a clock on the top. I had no idea that there were four clock faces, and now that it's been described to me, I find that it is much more decorative than I'd expected. That's because it was partially designed by Pugin, the French architect, who collaborated with Sir Charles Barry on the tower as well as the palace. Pugin favoured the neo-Gothic style and designed many Victorian churches, and the ecclesiastical influence is particularly noticeable in the carved stonework on the exterior. The tower is built of sand-coloured limestone from Yorkshire and is 12 metres square at the ground level and rises to a height of 96 metres. The tower is divided below the roof into six sections, separated by horizontal bands of small arched windows, surrounded by carved stonework. The two lower sections echo the design of the adjacent parliamentary building, each having a row of tall windows. Then the tower seems to become independent and assert itself, soaring high above the roof of the main building, solid yet elegant. Three further identical sections with intricately carved stonework around four slim windows rise up one above the other until we reach the sixth part, which houses the clock. The four circular clock faces stand slightly proud of the surface of the tower, and each face is set inside a cast iron frame with an heraldic beast in each corner and a row of shields above. The square frame and the carved stonework surrounding it are ornately decorated in dark green and gold. The clock face is 7 metres in diameter and inlaid with hundreds of pieces of opaque or milk glass. Each face is marked out with concentric circles. The hands fixed in the centre are surrounded by the hours shown by Roman numerals and a narrow outer circle divided into minutes. The hour hand is of solid bronze and measures 2.7 metres, and the minute hand is a hollow copper tube 4.2 metres long. Carved in stone under each clock dial is a Latin inscription, which translates as, "O Lord, save our Queen Victoria the First." At night, the tower is floodlit, and the clock faces glow. They are lit from behind by low-energy, long-life bulbs, so that you can still see the hands and the figures. I was wondering how those huge dials could be kept clean. Apparently, once every 5 years, specialist technicians reach them in the only way possible, by abseiling down from the top of the tower. Above each clock face is a row of stone arches, just below the roof. It's not like a house roof, as I'd imagined. It's of grey slate and is in two parts. The section of roof sloping back above each clock face has two rows of tiny windows, edged with gold leaf. Then there's a square of stone arches housing a lantern, which is lit when either House of Parliament is sitting after dark. Then above the lantern, four triangular sections of roof with even tinier gold-edged windows meet and rise up like a medieval castle with slim pinnacles and a slender spire topped off with a golden crown, flowers and a cross. There are 334 steps up to the belfry, and if you're a UK resident and feeling fit, it is possible to take a guided tour up inside the tower, past the clock mechanism and right up as far as the bell platform. This can be arranged through your Member of Parliament, though be warned, the tours are very popular and may take a while to set up. Meanwhile, I might just log on to the internet and find a site called the Big Ben Podcast Tour, to hear someone making a climb with a knowledgeable guide who tells many more fascinating stories about the Elizabeth Tower.
Thank you, Gary.